Salutations, friends, and welcome to another hour of classic entertainment as we gather yet again around the old part of the radio. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I'm thrilled you could join me yet again for another trip to the days when transistors and not picture tubes provide us with a daily entertainment. Today, I'm bringing you a great episode from the Campbell Playhouse, which began as the Mercury Theater on the Air on July 11, 1938, and changed names, and Campbell's Soups became the sponsor on December 9, 1938, and ran under the new title until June 13, 1941. All episodes aired on CBS. Today I'm bringing you the first radio adaptation of the classic American play Our Town, written by Thornton Wilder. This play won the Pulitzer Prize in 1938 and is considered one of the greats of modern American theater. The Campbell Playhouse first aired their adaptation on Friday, May 12, 1939 at 9 p.m. on CBS and starred Orson Welles as the stage manager and John Craven reprises his role of George, which he first performed on stage as part of the original stage production of the play. Enjoy.
Campbell's Soup presents The Campbell Playhouse. Orson Welles, producer. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ernest Chappell. Tonight, the Campbell Playhouse has the signal honor of presenting for its first performance on the air one of the classics of the modern American theater. The winner of the Pulitzer Prize for the best play of 1938, Our Town by Thornton Wilder. There was much talk when it was first produced in the theater because it was performed without scenery or props. The lovable, garrulous stage manager filling in gaps and explaining things as he went along. Tonight, Orson Welles plays that part. And young John Craven is with us as George, the role he created in the original stage production. And now, Orson Welles in Our Town.
This play is called Our Town. It was written by Thornton Wilder. In it, you will hear Miss Patricia Newton, Miss Agnes Moorhead, Miss Effie Palmer, Mr. John Craven, Mr. Ray Collins, Mr. Everett Sloan, Mr. Parker Finley, and many others. Name of the town is Grover's Corners, New Hampshire. It's across the Massachusetts line. Longitude 42 degrees, 40 minutes. Latitude 70 degrees, 37 minutes. First act shows a day in our town. Day is May 7th, 1901. Time is just before dawn. Sky is beginning to show some streaks of light over in the east there, behind our mountain. Morning star always gets wonderful bright the minute before it has to go. Only lights on in town and a cottage over by the tracks where a Polish mother's just had twins. And in the Joe Crowell house where Joe Jr. is getting up so as to deliver the paper. And in the depot where Shorty Hawkins is getting ready to flag the 545 for Boston. And there it is. And it comes now. And so another day begun. There's Doc Gibbs coming down Main Street. Coming back from that baby case. Here's his wife coming downstairs to get breakfast. Doc Gibbs died in 1930. New hospital's named after him. Mrs. Gibbs died first, a long time ago, in fact. She went out to visit her daughter, Rebecca, who married an insurance man in Canton, Ohio, and died there, pneumonia. But her body was brought back here. She's up in the cemetery there now, in with a old mess of Gibbses and Herseys. She was Julia Hersey before she married Doc Gibbs in the Congregational Church over there. In our town, we like to know the facts about everybody. And that's Doc Gibbs now. Here comes Joe Crowell, Jr., delivering the papers.
Morning, Doc. Here. Morning, Joe.
Yes, that's it. And here comes Howie Newsom delivering the milk.
Get up, Betsy. What's the matter with you? Come on. Morning, Doc.
Morning, Howie.
Hey, somebody sick?
Eric Quinn's over to Miss Gorlowski.
Quinn's?
say. This town's getting bigger every year. Morning, Miss Gibbs.
Morning, Howie.
Chicken smells good.
Everything all right, dear?
Yes, I declare. Easy as kittens.
They can be ready in a minute. Sit down, drink the coffee. Children!
Yes,
children! Now get up, George.
Yes,
Rebecca?
Yes, Mama.
You can catch a couple hours sleep this morning, can't you?
Well, Miss Wentworth's coming at 11. I guess I know what's about to. Her stomach ain't what ought to be.
All told, you won't get more than 3 hours sleep. Thank Gibbs, I don't know what's going to become of you. I do wish I could get you to go away someplace and take a rest. I think it'd do you good. George! Rebecca, you'll be late for school.
Bobby! Emily! You'll be late for school.
And that's Mrs. Webb now, next door to the Gibbses, getting her family up for the day.
Bobby, you wash yourself good, or I'll come up and do it myself. I'll put away your books, Emily.
You know the rules well as I do. No books at table. As for me, I'd rather have my children healthy than bright.
I'm both, Mom. You know I am. I'm the brightest girl in school for my age. I have a wonderful memory.
I'll eat your breakfast.
The Webbses have two children, little Wally and Emily. Emily's 14. And there's two over the way at the Gibbses, Rebecca and George. George is 15.
Mama,
George is throwing stuff at me. I'll come up and slap the both of you. That's what I'll do.
We've got a factory in our town, too. Hear it? Makes blankets. Cartwright's on it, and it's brought him a fortune.
Speak to your father about it when he's rested.
Seems to me 25 cents a week is enough for a boy your age, George Gibbs. I declare I don't know how you spend it all.
Oh, Ma, I got a lot of things to buy.
Strawberry frosties, that's what you spend it on.
Well, I don't see how Rebecca comes to have so much money. She has more than a dollar.
Well, I've been saving it up gradual.
Well, dear, I think it's a good thing every now and then to spend some.
Mama?
Hmm?
You know what I love most in the world? Do you? Money.
Eat your breakfast.
There's the first ball.
Oh, I'm not fast, but you don't have to run. George, pull up your pants to me, and don't slump, George.
Wally, tell Miss Foster I send her my best congratulations.
Mama.
Do you remember that?
Am I pretty?
You look real nice, Rebecca, and I'll pick up your feet.
Goodbye, Mama.
Bye, Mom.
Goodbye.
Goodbye,
George. Bye. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Myrtle. How's your cold?
Well, it's better, but I told Charles I didn't know if I'd go to choir practice tonight. Wouldn't be any use.
Well, just saying, you come to choir practice, Myrtle, and try it. Well, if I don't feel no worse than I do now, I probably will. Well, I'm resting myself. I thought I'd string some of these beans. Let me help you. Beans have been good this year. I decided to put up 40 quarts if it kills me. The children say they hate them, but I notice they're able to get them down all winter.
Thanks, Mrs. Gibbs. Thanks, Mrs. Webb. Folks, most every morning, Mrs. Gibbs goes over to Mrs. Webb's, or Mrs. Webb visits Mrs. Gibbs. So we'll just leave them there, visiting, and skip a few hours in the day at Grover's Corners. Well, now it's middle of the afternoon. All 2,642 have had their dinners, and all the dishes have been washed. There's an early afternoon calm in our town, a buzzing and a humming from the school buildings, only a few buggies on Main Street, the horses dozing at the hitching post. You all remember what it's like. Doc Gibbs is in his office, tapping people and making him say, ah, and Mr. Webb's cutting his lawn over there. One man in 10 thinks it's a privilege to push his own lawnmower. No, sir, it's later than I thought. There are the children come home from school already, and here comes Emily Webb, George Gibbs.
Hello.
You made a fine speech in class.
Well, I was really ready to make a speech about the Monroe Doctrine, but at the last minute, Miss Corkin made me talk about the Louisiana Purchase instead. I worked an awful long time on both of them.
Gee, it's funny, Emily. From my window over there, I can just see your head nights when you're over in your room doing your homework.
Why, can you?
You certainly do stick to it. I don't see how you can sit still that long. I guess you like school.
Well, I feel it's something you have to go through.
Yeah?
I don't mind it, really. It passes the time.
You're just naturally bright, Emily, I guess.
Well, I figure it's just the way a person's born.
Yeah. But you see, I want to be a farmer. And my Uncle Luke says whenever I'm ready, I can come over and work on this farm, and if I'm any good, well, I can just gradually have it.
You mean the house and everything?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, thanks. I better be getting out the baseball field. Thanks for the talk, Emily. Good afternoon, Mrs. Webb.
Good afternoon, George.
So long, Emily.
So long, George. Emily, come and help me string these beans for the winter. George Gibbs let himself have a real conversation, didn't he?
Why, he's growing up.
How old would George be?
I don't know.
See, he must be almost 16.
Mama, I made a speech in class today, and I was very good.
You must recite it to your father at supper. What was it about?
The Louisiana Purchase. Just like silk off a spool. I'm going to make speeches all my life. Mama, will you answer me a question serious?
Seriously, not serious, dear.
Seriously. Will you?
Well, of course I will.
Mama, am I good-looking?
Yes, of course you are. All my children have got good features. I'd be ashamed if they hadn't.
Mama, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, well, what I mean is, am I pretty?
I've already told you yes. Now, that's enough of that. You have a nice, young, pretty face. I never heard of such foolishness.
Oh, Mama, you never tell us the truth about anything.
I am telling you the truth.
Mama, were you pretty?
Yes, I was, if I do say it. I was the prettiest girl in town next to Mamie Cartwright.
But, Mama, you've got to say something about me. Am I pretty enough to get, well, to get people interested in me?
Emily, you make me tired. Now stop it. You're pretty enough for all normal purposes. Come along now and bring that bowl with you.
Oh, Mama, you're no help at all.
We'll have to interrupt again here. Thank you, Mrs. Webb. Thank you, Emily. A lot of time's gone by. It's evening now. You can hear choir practice going on in the congregational church. Hear it? All the children are at home doing their schoolwork by now. Yeah, the day's run down like a tired clock.
Emily?
Hello.
Hello.
I can't work at all. The moonlight's so terrible.
Emily, did you get the third problem?
Which?
The third.
Oh, I guess, George. That's the easiest of them all.
I don't see it. Can you give me a hint?
I'll tell you one thing. The answer's in yards.
Yards? How do you mean?
In square yards.
Oh, in square yards.
Yes, George. Don't you see?
Yeah.
In square yards of wallpaper.
Oh, square yards of wallpaper. Thanks a lot, Emily.
You're welcome. My, isn't the moonlight terrible? Choir practice going on. I think if you hold your breath, you can hear the train all the way to Kankuka. Hear it?
What do you know?
Well, I guess I'd better go back and try to work.
Good night, Emily, and thanks.
Good night, George.
Good night, Martha. Good night, Cecilia.
Here comes Mrs. Webb, Mrs. Gibbs. Some of their lady friends home from choir practice.
I'll tell Mr. Webb. I know he'll want to put it in the paper. My, it's late. Good night, Irma. Real nice choir practice, wasn't it? Mr. Webb, look at that moon, will you? Hate weather, for sure. My, I hate to go to bed on a night like this. I've got to hurry. Those children will be sitting up all hours. Good night, Luella.
Good night, Mabel.
Good night, Susan.
Good night, Julia.
Good night.
Now, folks, there's some more things we got to explore about this town. This time we're going about it in another way. Going to look back on it from the future. You know, the Cartwright interests had just begun building a new bank in Grover's Corners and had to go to Vermont for the marble, sorry to say. They've asked a friend of mine what they should put in the cornerstone for people to dig up 1,000 years from now. Of course, they put in a copy of the New York Times, a copy of Mr. Webb's Sentinel. He's the editor at Sentinel. We're kind of interested in this because some scientific fellows have found a way of painting all that reading matter with a kind of glue, a silicate glue, make it keep 1,000, 2,000 years. So we're putting in a Bible and a Constitution of the United States, a copy of William Shakespeare's plays, and what do you think? You know, Babylon once had 2 million people in it. All we know about them is the names of the kings and some copies of wheat contracts and sales of slaves. Yet every night, all those families sat down to supper, and the father came home from his work, and the smoke went up the chimney, same as here. And even in Greece and Rome, all we know about the real life of the people is what we can piece together out of the joking poems and the comedies they wrote for the theater back then. So, I'm going to have a copy of this play put in the cornerstone, and the people 1,000 years from now know a few simple facts about us. More than the Treaty of Versailles and the Lindbergh flight. See what I mean? Well, you people 1,000 years from now, in the provinces north of New York at the beginning of the 20th century, people ate 3 meals a day, soon after sunrise, at noon, and at sunset. Every seventh day, by law and by religion, was a day of rest, and all work come to a stop. Domestic setup was marriage, binding relation between a male and one female that lasted for life. Guess we don't have to tell you about the government and business forms, because thing people seem to hand down first of all. You see, not as anything else. Oh, yes. At death, people were buried in the ground just as they are. So, friends, this is the way we were in our growing up and in our marrying and in our doctoring and in our living and in our dying. And now we return to our day in Grover's Corners. A lot of time's gone by. There's George up there in the window talking with Rebecca.
Get out, Rebecca. There's only room for one at this window. You're always spoiling everything.
Well, let me look just a minute.
Well, use your own window.
I did, but there's no moon there. George, do you know what I think? Do you? I think maybe the moon's getting nearer and nearer. And there'll be a big explosion.
Rebecca, you don't know anything. If the moon were getting nearer, the guys that sit up all night with telescopes would see it first. And they'd tell us about it. And it'd be in all the newspapers.
George, is the moon shining on South America, Canada, and half the world?
Well, probably is.
Well, folks, there it is. Another night, Grover's Corners. There they are. 9:30. Most of the lights out. And now there's Constable Warren trying a few doors on Main Street. And here comes Editor Webb after putting his newspaper to bed. All right, Editor Webb.
Evening, Bill. Evening, Mr. Webb. Quite a moon. Who's that up there? That you, Mother?
No, it's me, Papa.
Why aren't you in bed?
I don't know. I just can't seem to sleep yet, Papa. The moonlight's so wonderful. And the smell of Mrs. Gibbs' heliotrope. Mmm, can you smell it?
Yeah. Any troubles on your mind, have you, Mother?
Troubles, Papa? No.
Well, enjoy yourself. Don't let your mother catch you. Night, Emily.
Good night, Papa.
I never told you about that letter Jane Crowfoot got from her minister when she was sick. The minister of her church in the town she was in before she came here. He wrote Jane a letter. And on the envelope, the address was like this. It said, Jane Crowfoot, the Crowfoot Farm, Grover's Corners, Sutton County, New Hampshire, United States of America.
What's funny about that?
Well, but listen, it's not finished. The United States of America, continent of North America, Western Hemisphere, the Earth, the solar system, the universe, the mind of God. That's what it said on the envelope.
What do you know?
And the postman brought it just the same.
What do you know?
That's the end of the first part of our broadcast, friend. Second part will begin in just a minute.
You are listening to the Campbell Playhouse presentation of Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize play, Our Town, starring Orson Welles. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. This is Ernest Chappell, ladies and gentlemen, welcoming you back to the Campbell Playhouse. And in a moment or two, we will resume our presentation of Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize play, Our Town. While Orson Welles was taking us through the streets and byways of our town, I fell to thinking of everybody's hometown and the changes that have taken place there. Not only the physical changes and the new faces, but the changes in habits. For instance, not so many years ago, people discovered the joy and refreshment and health benefits of drinking tomato juice at breakfast. Well, that was certainly a change for the better in the eating habits in my town and yours. Then there was a time when women felt that only homemade chicken soup was good enough for their families. Well, this too has changed, for people have discovered the same good chicken eating in Campbell's chicken soup as in the best of homemade soup without the fuss and bother of preparing it. It's evident that a great many families have found out how good Campbell's chicken soup really is because we're called upon to make more and more of it. Have you had it lately? Now we resume our Campbell Playhouse presentation of Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize play, Our Town, starring Orson Welles with John Craven.
Well, folks, 3 years have gone by. Yeah, the sun's come up over 1,000 times. Summers and winters have cracked the mountains a little bit more, and the rains have brought down some of the dirt. Some babies that weren't even born before have begun talking regular sentences already. A number of people who thought they were right young and spry have noticed that they can't bound up a flight of stairs like they used to without their heart fluttering a little. Some older sons are sitting at the head of the table, and some people I know are having their meat cut up for them. All that can happen in 1,000 days. Nature's been pushing and contriving in other ways, too. A number of young people fell in love and got married. Yes, mountain got bit away a few fractions of an inch. Millions of gallons of water went by the mill, and here and there, a new home was set up under a roof. Almost everybody in the world gets married, know what I mean? Our town, there aren't hardly any exceptions. Most everybody in the world climbs into their graves married. So, 3 years later, it's 1904. It's July 7th, just after high school commencement. That's the time most of our young people jump up and get married. Soon as they pass their last examinations in solid geometry and Cicero's orations, looks like they suddenly feel themselves fit to be married. It's early morning. There, you can hear the 5:45 of Boston. Here comes Harry Newsom delivering the milk. There's Mrs. Gibbs and Mrs. Webb come down to breakfast, just though it were an ordinary day. I don't have to point out to the women in my audience that both these ladies cook 3 meals a day. One of them for 20 years, the other for 40. No summer vacation. Brought up 2 children apiece. Washed, cleaned the house, never a nervous breakdown. Never thought themselves hard used, either.
Well, Ma, day's come. You're losing one of your chicks.
Thank Gibbs, don't you say another word. I feel like crying every minute.
Come on,
sit down, drink your coffee.
Groom's up shaving himself. Whistling and singing like he's glad to leave us.
Hmm.
Every now and then he says, I do, to the mirror. But it don't sound convincing to me.
Mm.
What? Why, Julia Hersey. French toast.
Mm. Ain't hard to make, and I had to do something.
I remember my wedding morning, Julia.
Now, don't stop that, Frank Gibbs. I tell you, can't stand it.
I was the scaredest young fellow in the state of New Hampshire. I thought I'd made a mistake, for sure.
Mm.
And when I see you coming down that aisle, I thought you was the prettiest girl I'd ever seen. But the only trouble was, I'd never seen you before. There I was in the Congregational Church, marrying a total stranger.
How do you think I felt?
Good morning, everybody. Only 4 more hours till this.
Where are you going?
Just across the grass to see my girl.
Now, George, you take my girl. I won't let you out. Good morning, Mr. Webb.
Well, George, how are you?
I'm fine. Mr. Webb, do you believe in superstitions?
Well, what superstition, George?
You know about a bride and groom not being supposed to see each other on a wedding morning?
Well, you see, on a wedding morning, the girl's head's have to be full of clothes and things like that. Don't you think that's probably it?
Yes. I never thought of that.
Girls have to be mighty nervous on a wedding day.
I wish a fella could get married without all that marching up and down.
Well, every man that's ever lived felt that way about it, George. Hasn't done much good. It's the women that have built up weddings, my boy. Now on, they have it pretty much the right. All those good women standing shoulder to shoulder, making sure that the knot's tied in a mighty public way.
You believe in it, don't you, Mr. Webb?
Oh, yes. Oh, don't you misunderstand me, my boy. Marriage is a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. Don't forget that, George.
No, sir. Mr. Webb, how old were you when you got married?
Well, you see, I'd been to college. I'd take a little time to get settled. But Mrs. Webb, she wasn't much older than what Emily is. Oh, age hasn't much to do with it, George. Not compared to other things. George, I was thinking the other night of some advice my father gave me when I got married. Charles is in. Charles, start out early, showing who's boss, he said. Best thing to do is to give an order, even if it don't make any sense. Just so she'll learn to obey. And, he said, if anything about your wife irritates you, or conversation or anything, just get up and leave the house. That'll make it clear to her, he said. And, oh, yes, he said never, never let your wife know how much money you have. Never.
Mr. Webb, I don't
think... So I took the opposite of my father's advice, and I've been happy ever since. But that'd be a lesson to you, George. Never to ask advice on personal matters. George, you going to raise chickens on your farm?
What?
You going to raise chickens on your farm?
Well, Uncle Luke hasn't gone in much of chicken raising.
Brooke came into my office the other day, George, on the philo system of raising chickens. I want you to read it.
Charles, are you talking about that old incubator again? I thought you two would be talking about things worthwhile. Good morning, George.
Well, Murdo, if you want to give the boys some good advice, I'll go upstairs and leave you alone with them.
Now, George, I'm sorry, but I've got to send you away so that Emily can come down and get some breakfast. She told me to tell you that she sends her love, that she doesn't want to lay eyes on you. So, goodbye, George.
Myrtle, I guess you don't know about that other superstition.
What do you mean, Charles?
Since the cavemen, the groom should never be left alone with his father-in-law on the day of the wedding or near it. Now, don't forget that.
Now, I have to interrupt again here. You see, we want to know how all this began, this wedding, this plan to spend a lifetime together. I'm often interested in how big things like that begin. You know how it is. You're 21 or 22, you make some decisions, then you're 70. You've been a lawyer for 50 years, and that white-haired lady at your side has eaten over 50,000 meals with you. How do such things begin? George and Emily are going to show you now the conversation they had when they first knew that the saying goes, they were meant for each other. Before they do it, I want you to try and remember what it was like when you were young, when you were 15 or 16. For some reason, it's very hard to do. Those days when even the little things in life could be almost too exciting to bear. And particularly, days when you're first in love. When you're like a person sleepwalking and didn't quite see the street you were in. Didn't quite hear everything that was said to you. Just a little bit crazy. Do you remember that, please? Now, they'll be coming out of high school at 3 o'clock. George just been elected president of the junior class, and it's June. That means he'll be president of the senior class all next year. And Emily's just been elected secretary of treasury. Don't have to tell you how important that is. All right, George.
Can I carry your books home for you, Emily?
Thank you.
I'm awful glad you were elected too, Emily.
Thank you.
Emily, why are you mad at me?
I'm not mad at you.
You're treating me so funny.
Well, I might as well say it right out, George. I don't like the whole change that's come over you in the last year. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings, but I just gotta tell the truth and shame the devil.
I'm awfully sorry, Emily. What do you mean?
Well, up to a year ago, I used to like you a lot, and I used to watch you as you did everything, because we'd been friends so long, and then you started spending all your time playing baseball. And you never even spoke to anybody anymore. Not even to your own family you didn't. And, George, it's a fact. You got awful conceited and stuck up, and all the girls say so. They may not say so to your face, but that's what they say about you behind your back. And it hurts me to hear them say it, but I got to agree with them a little. And, well, I'm sorry if it hurts your feelings, but I can't be sorry I said it.
I'm glad you said it, Emily. I never thought that such a thing was happening to me. I guess it's hard for a fellow not to have some faults creep into his character.
I always expect a man to be perfect, and I think he should be.
Well, I don't think it's possible to be perfect, Emily.
Well, my father is. As far as I can see, your father is. There's no reason on earth why you shouldn't be, too.
Emily, I feel it's the other way around. That men aren't naturally good, but girls are. Like you and your mother and my mother.
Well, you might as well know right now that I'm not perfect. Not as easy for a girl to be perfect as a man because, well, because we girls are more nervous. Now, I'm sorry I said all that about you. I don't know what made me say it.
Oh, I guess if it's the truth, you ought to say it. You stick to it, Emily.
Well, I don't know if it's the truth or not, and I suddenly feel it isn't important at all.
Emily, would you like an ice cream soda or something before you go home?
Well, thank you. I would.
Hello, George.
Hello, Emily.
Well, what do you have?
Why, Emily Webb, what have you been crying about?
Well, she got an awful scare, Mr. Morgan. She almost got run over by that hardware store wagon. Everybody always says that Tom Huckins drives like a crazy man.
Well, here, take a drink of water, Emily. Say, you look all shook up. There. Now, what do you have?
I have a strawberry phosphate, thank you, Mr. Morgan.
No, no, Emily, have an ice cream soda with me. Two strawberry ice cream sodas, Mr. Morgan.
Yes, sir. Tell you, you know, you've got to look both ways before you cross Main Street these days. It gets worse every year. 125 horses and go over the corner this minute that I'm talking to you. State inspector was in here yesterday. And now, they're bringing in these automobiles. Best thing to do is just stay home, I guess. Why, I can remember the time when a dog could lie all day in the middle of Main Street and nothing would come along to disturb him.
Mr. Morgan.
Oh, yes, Miss Ellis. I'll be with you in a minute. Now, here are your sodas. Well, enjoy them.
They're so expensive.
No, no, don't think of that. We're celebrating. First, we're celebrating our election. And then, do you know what else I'm celebrating?
No.
I'm celebrating because I've got a friend who tells me everything that ought to be told me.
George, please don't think of that. I don't know why I said it. It's not true.
No, you stick to it, Emily. I'm glad you spoke to me the way you did. But you'll see, I'm going to change so quick that I'm going to change. And, Emily, I want to ask you a favor.
What?
Well, if I go away to State Agriculture College next year, will you write me a letter once in a while?
I certainly will. I certainly will, George. It certainly seems like being away 3 years, you get out of touch with things.
Yeah. You know, Emily, whenever I meet a farmer, I ask him if he thinks it's important to go away to agriculture school to be a good farmer.
Why, George.
Yeah, and some of them say that it's even a waste of time. Uncle Luke's getting old. He's about ready for me to start in taking over his farm tomorrow if I could.
My.
And like you say, being gone all that time, meeting other people in other places, if anything like that can happen, I don't want to go away. I guess new people aren't any better than old ones. I'll bet you they almost never are. Emily, I feel that you're as good a friend as I've got, and I don't need to go to other towns to meet other people. Emily, I'm going to make up my mind right now. I won't go. I'll tell Pa about it tonight.
Why, George, I don't see why you have to decide right now. It's a whole year away.
Emily, I'm glad you spoke to me about that. That failed in my character. What you said was right, but there was one thing wrong in it. That was where you said that I wasn't noticing people. And you, for instance. Listen, Emily, you say you were watching me when I did everything. I was doing the same thing about you all the time. Sure, I always thought about you as one of the chief people I thought about. And I always made sure where you were sitting in the bleachers and who you were with. And we've always had lots of talking and joking and everything. And they meant a lot to me. Of course, they weren't as good as the talk we're having now. Lately, I've been noticing that you've been acting kind of funny to me. And for 3 days, I've been trying to walk home with you. But something's always gotten away. Yesterday, I was standing over by the wall waiting for you. You walked home with Miss Corcoran.
George, life's awful funny. How could I know that? Well, I
thought... Listen, Emily, I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to go away to agriculture college. I think that once you've found a person you're very fond of, well, that is, who's fond of you, too, at least enough to be interested in your character, well, I think that that's just as important as college is, even more so. That's what I think.
I think it's awfully important, too.
Emily.
Yes, George?
Emily, if I do improve and make a big change, would you be... Well, that is... Could you be...
I am now. I always have been.
Oh, I guess this is an important talk we've been having.
Yes.
Now, before we go on to the wedding, there are still some more things we ought to know about this marriage. I want to know some more about how the parents took it, but What I want to know most of all is, you know what I mean, what Grover's Corners thought about marriage anyway.
Julia, when I married you, you know what one of my terrors was in getting married?
Oh, sure. Go on with it.
I was afraid that we weren't going to have material for conversation more than would last us just a few weeks. Yeah, I was afraid we'd run out, eat our meals in silence. In fact, but you and I have been conversing for 20 years now without any noticeable barren spells.
Well, good weather, bad weather. Ain't very choice, but always manage to find something to say.
What do you think? What do you think, Julia? Shall we tell the boy that he can go ahead and get married?
Oh, there you go, putting the responsibility on me.
Well, I'll go up. I'll go up and say a word to him right now before he goes to bed, huh? You're sure, Julia? You got nothing more to add?
Well, I don't know what to say. Seems like too much to ask for a big outdoor boy like that to go and get shut up in the classrooms for 3 years. Once he's on the farm, he might just well have companions. He needs to find a fine girl like Emily. People are meant to live two by two in this world. Oh, yes, Frank, go up and tell him it's all right.
Yeah, I'll call him. George? Oh, George.
Yes, Pop?
Can you come down a minute? Your mother and me want to speak to you.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, Lord, what a fool I am. I'm trembling all over. Nothing to tremble about.
Now we're ready to go on with the wedding. Well, folks, there are things to be said about a wedding. A lot of thoughts that go on during a wedding. Can't get them all into one wedding, actually. And especially not into a wedding at Grover's Corners where they're awful plain and short. In this wedding, I play the minister. Take that part. Gives me the right to say a few more things about it. For a while now, the play gets pretty serious. See, some churches say that marriage is a sacrament. I don't know what that means, but I can guess. You know, like Mrs. Gibbs said just now, people were made to live two by two. Now, this is a good wedding, but people are so put together that even at a good wedding, there's a lot of confusion way down deep in people's minds. We thought that that ought to be in our play, too.
Why on earth I should be crying? I suppose there's nothing to cry about. Come over to me at breakfast this morning. There was Emily, eating her breakfast as she's done for 17 years. And now she's going off to eat it in someone else's house. I suppose that's it. There they come.
I wish I were back at school. I don't want to get married.
George, what's the matter?
I don't want to grow old. Why is everybody pushing me so?
Why, George, you wanted it.
Why do I have to get married at all? Listen, Ma, for the last time I ask you...
George, if anyone should hear me, now stop. I'm ashamed of you.
What's the matter? I've been dreaming. Where's Emily?
Gracious, you gave me such a turn.
Oh, cheer up, Ma. What are you looking so funny for? Cheer up. I'm getting married.
Let me catch my breath a minute.
No, Ma. You say Thursday nights. Emily and I are coming over to dinner every Thursday night. You'll see.
Stop.
What are you crying for? Oh, we've got to get ready for this.
I never felt so alone in my whole life. And George over there looking so... I hate him. I wish I were dead. Papa.
Emily, now. Don't get upset.
But, Papa, I don't want to get married.
Emily, everything's all right.
Oh, why can't I stay for a while just as I am? Let's go away.
No, Emily. No, stop and think.
Don't you remember that you used to say, all the time you used to say that I was your girl? You must be lots of places we can go to. Let's go away. I'll work for you. I can keep house.
Why, you mustn't think of such things. You're just nervous, Emily. Now, you're marrying the best young fellow in the world. George is a fine fellow.
Oh, but Papa...
George.
Yes, Mr. Webb.
You've given away my daughter, George. You think you can care for her?
Mr. Webb, I want to try. Emily, I'm going to do my best. I love you, Emily. I need you.
Well, if you love me, help me. All I want is someone to love me.
I will, Emily.
If I'm ever sick or in trouble, that's what I mean.
Emily, I'll try. I'll try.
And I mean forever. Do you hear? Forever and ever.
All right.
George take this woman, Emily, to be your wedded wife? To live together after God's ordinance, the holy estate of matrimony, with our lover, comforter, honor, and keeper, in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, keep thee only unto her so long as we both shall live. Answer now, George.
I do.
Don't know, friend. I've seen such a...
You, Emily, take this man, George, in the state of matrimony. Wilt thou love her, comfort him, honor him, keep him in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, keep thee only under it so long as ye both shall live? Answer, Emily.
I do.
Married 200 couples in my day. You should get it wrong. Do I believe in it? I don't know. M marries N. Millions of them. Cottage, the go-kart... Sunday afternoon drives in the Ford. The first rheumatism, the grandchildren, the second rheumatism. Deathbed, reading the will. Once in a thousand times, it's interesting. Well, let's have Mendelssohn's wedding march. Time 9 years gone by, friends. Summer 1913. Gradual changes in Grover's Corners. Horses are getting rarer and farmers coming into town in Fords. Everybody locks their house doors now at night. Ain't been any burglars in town yet, but everybody's heard about them. You'd be surprised, though, on the whole. Things don't change much at Grover's Corners. We're up at the cemetery now. I don't know how you feel about such things, but this certainly is a beautiful place. It's on a hilltop, windy hilltop, lots of sky, lots of clouds, often lots of sun and moon and stars. Come up here on a fine afternoon, you can see range on range of hills. Awful blue they are up there by Lake Sunapee, Lake Winnipesaukee. Way up, if you've got a glass, you can see the White Mountains. Mount Washington, where North Conway is. And Conway, of course, our favorite mountain. Right here, all around it. Jaffrey, other towns, East Jaffrey and Peterborough. Dublin, there, quite a ways down is Grover's Corners. Yes, beautiful spot up here. Mountain laurel and lilacs. I often wonder why people like to be buried in Woodlawn, Brooklyn, when they might pass the same time up there, New Hampshire. Oh, there, the old stone, 1670, 1680, strong-minded people that come a long way to be independent. Over there, some Civil War veterans, too. Iron flags on the graves, New Hampshire boys. Had a notion that the Union ought to be kept together, though they'd never seen more than 50 miles of it themselves. All they knew was the name, friends. The United States of America. The United States of America. Went and died about it. Now, this here is the new part of the cemetery. Here's your friend, Mrs. Gibbs. Remember her? Let me see. Here's Mr. Stimson, organist of the Congregational Church. And over there's Mrs. Soames, who enjoyed the wedding so much. A lot of this. Editor Webb's boy, Wallace, whose appendix burst while he was a Boy Scout. Went on a trip to Crawford Notch. Well, there's some living people. There's Joe Stoddard, our undertaker, over there supervising a new-made grave. Here comes a Grover's Corners boy that left town to go out west.
Afternoon, Joe Stoddard.
Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Oh, let me see. Do I know you?
I'm Sam Craig.
Gracious sakes alive of all people. Well, I should have known you'd be back for the funeral. Well, you've been away a long time, Sam.
Yeah, I've been away over 12 years. I'm in business out in Buffalo now, Joe. But I was in the East when I got news of my cousin's death, so I thought I'd kind of... combine things a little and come and see the old home. Yeah, well, you look well.
Yes, I can't complain. Well, it's a sad journey for us today, Samuel.
Yep.
Yes, I always say I hate to supervise when a young person is taken.
Why, there's old Farmer McCarthy. I didn't know he was gone. Used to do chores for him after school. He had lumbago.
Yes, we brought Farmer McCarthy here a number of years ago now.
Why, this is my Aunt Julia.
Yes. Doc Gibbs lost his wife 2-3 years ago, just about this time. The day's another bad blow for him, too.
Joe, what did she die of?
Who?
Why, my cousin, Emily.
Oh, didn't you know? Had some trouble bringing a baby into the world. Let's see, today's Friday. It's almost a week ago now.
Did the baby live?
No. There's a second, though. His little boy, about 4 years old.
Now, I'm going to tell you some things you know already. You know them as well as I do, but you don't take them out and look at them very often. I don't care what they say with their mouths. Everybody knows that something is eternal. It ain't houses, and it ain't names, it ain't earth, it ain't even the stars. Everybody knows in their bones that something is eternal, and that something has to do with human beings. All the greatest people ever lived have been telling us that for, oh, I don't know how long they've been telling us, 5,000 years, and yet you'd be surprised how people are always losing hold of it. Something way down deep that's eternal about every human being. You know as well as I do that the dead don't stay interested in us living people very long. Gradually, they let hold of the earth. The ambitions they had and the pleasures they had and the things they suffered and people they loved. They get weaned away from earth. That's the way I put it. Weaned away. Yeah. They stay here while the earth part of them burns away, burns out. And all that time, they slowly get indifferent to what's going on in Grover's Corners. They're waiting. Waiting for something that they feel is coming, something important and great. Aren't they waiting for the eternal part in them to come out clear? Some of the things they're going to say maybe will hurt your feelings. That's the way it is. Mother and daughter, husband and wife, enemy and enemy, money and miser, all those terribly important things kind of grow pale around here. And what's left? What's left when memory's gone? And your identity, Mrs. Smith.
Important day in your life. It will be important enough. Kathy since I was married or since the baby was born. I can choose a birthday at least, can't I? I choose my 12th birthday.
All right. February 11th, 1899, Tuesday. Do you want any special time of day?
Oh, I want the whole day.
We'll begin at dawn. Remember, it had been snowing for several days, but it stopped the night before, and they'd begun clearing the roads. Sun's coming up.
There's Main Street. Why, that's Mr. Morgan's drugstore before he changed it. And there's the livery stable.
Yes, it's 1899. 14 years ago.
Look, there's High Newsome. There's our policeman. But he's dead. He died.
You can come down, dress for the kitchen fire if you like, but hurry. Oh, good morning, Mr. Newsome.
Morning.
Oh, it's cold.
10 below by my barn, Miss Webb.
Think of
it.
Keep yourself wrapped up. Oh, Charles, coffee's ready when you want it. Oh, and Charles, don't forget, it's Emily's birthday. You remember to get her something?
Yes, that's up here. Where's my girl?
Well, don't interrupt her now, Charles. You can see her at breakfast. She's slow enough as it is. Hurry up, children. It's 7 o'clock. Now, I don't want to call you again.
I can't bear it. They're so young and beautiful. Why did they ever have to get old? Mama, I'm here. I'm grown up. I love you all. Everything. I can't look at everything hard enough. There's the butternut tree. There's Mr. Morgan's drugstore. There's the high school forever, never, never. And there's the Congregational Church where I got married. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Mama.
Well, now, dear, a very happy birthday to my little girl and many, many happy returns. There's some surprises waiting for you on the kitchen table. That and the blue paper is from your Aunt Carrie. And I reckon you can guess who brought the postcard album. Found it on the doorstep when I brought in the milk. George Gibbs. Must have come over in the cold pretty early. Right nice of him.
George. I'd forgotten that.
Now, chew that bacon slow. It'll help keep you warm on a cold day.
Oh, Mama, just look at me once as though you really saw me. Mama, 14 years have gone by. I'm dead. You're a grandmother, Mama. I married George Gibbs, Mama. Wally's dead, too. Mama, his appendix burst on a camping trip to North Conway. We felt just terrible about it. Don't you remember? But just for a moment now, we're all together. Mama, just for a moment, we're happy. Let's look at one of
that in the yellow paper is something I found in the attic among your grandmother's things. You're old enough to wear it now, and I thought you'd like it. Your father has a surprise for you, too. Don't know what it is myself. Here he comes.
I can't go on. Oh, it goes so fast. We don't have time to look at one another. I didn't realize. So all that was going on, and we never noticed. Take me back. Up the hill to my grave. But first, wait a minute. One more look. Goodbye. Goodbye, world. Goodbye, Gilbert Corners. Mama and Papa. Goodbye to the clock ticking. And Mama's sunflowers. And food and coffee. And the iron dresses and hot baths. And sleeping and waking up. Oh, Earth. You're too wonderful for anybody to realize you. Don't a human being ever realize life while they live it every minute?
No. Saints and poets, maybe. They do, some.
Mother Gibbs, I should have listened to you. Now I want to be quiet for a while. Oh, Mother Gibbs, I saw it all. I saw your garden.
Did you, dear? Look, it's clearing up. The stars are coming out.
Here's one of them coming back. That's funny. Ain't no time for one of them to be here.
Goodness sake. Mother Gibbs, it's George.
Dear, you just rest yourself.
It's George. He's throwing himself down here. On the ground.
Goodness, that ain't no way to be he. He ought to be home.
Mother Gibbs?
Yes, Emily?
They don't understand much, do they?
No, dear. Not very much.
Well, most everybody's asleep in Grover's Corners. There are a few lights on. Shorty Hawkins down at the depot has just watched the Albany train go by. At the livery stable, somebody's setting up late and talking. Yeah, it's clearing up. There the stars doing their old crisscross journeys in the sky. Scholars haven't settled the matter yet, but they seem to think there are no living beings up there. Just chalk, fire. Only this one is straining away all the time to make something out of itself. Strained so bad that every 16 hours everybody lies down and gets a rest. Yeah, it's 11 o'clock in Grover's Corners. You get a good rest, too. Good night.
This concludes the Campbell Playhouse presentation of Our Town by Thornton Wilder, starring Orson Welles with John Craven. In just a moment, Mr. Welles will return to the microphone, but first a word on behalf of our sponsors. Earlier this evening, I promised you you'd find Campbell's chicken soup every bit as good as the finest chicken soup you've ever tasted. I'll go further than that. I believe you'll find it even better. And I say this for two reasons. First, because thousands and thousands have welcomed Campbell's chicken soup with downright enthusiasm and are now serving it regularly. Second, because I've seen how Campbell's chicken soup is made. Campbell's use all the good meat of plump, government-inspected chickens. Long and slowly they simmer the broth till it attains a glistening golden color, till every drop is rich with chicken flavor. Light, fluffy rice is added, and to complete your enjoyment, tender pieces of chicken meat. I'm sure you'll be delighted with Campbell's chicken soup. The makers of Campbell's Soups join Orson Welles in inviting you to be with us at the Campbell Playhouse again next Friday evening when lovely Ida Lupino of the screen joins him in that fabulous stage hit of the 1920s, The Bad Man, a story of love and laughter in old Mexico with Orson Welles himself as a bold and not over-successful bandit. Meanwhile, if you have enjoyed tonight's Campbell Playhouse presentation, won't you tell your grocer so tomorrow when you order Campbell's Chicken Soup? This is Ernest Chappell saying thank you and good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, what a great play. You were listening to Our Town on the Campbell Playhouse. That episode was first heard on Friday, May 12, 1939 on CBS. I read the original play way back in 1993 for English 10, and I've seen the classic 1940s movie too. So I was thrilled to find the original radio adaptation of Our Town and play it on today's program. I should mention that today's episode starred Orson Welles as a stage manager and John Craven reprised his role as George. I'm almost out of time, but I'll pass along my contact information. My email address is opr@telus.net, T-E-L-U-S, and my postal address is Old Parlor Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. I'd love to hear from you. From the CFAS Studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.